Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 11th. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, yeah, it's time to talk car maintenance and repair with our friend Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's an independent repair, towing, and used car facility. You have a question about your vehicle? Give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. You know, however you do it soon, because it's a very popular show. People don't get through at the end, and they get upset. There's nothing I can do. It's only an hour show. The number's 800-348-2551. It's Gordon Fricke, and your car calls coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Once again with us to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions, it's Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years, and he's now the star of, some speaking engagements live and in person, and we'll talk about that in a minute. If you have a question for the famous Gordon Fricke, it's 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org if you wish, but you could call. We love calls on this call-in show, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, what a triumph we had up at the Saratoga Automobile Museum,
That was a lot of fun, and I've had some feedback from people that were there, and I think it went well.
Ordinarily, I'm much less than a glass half full. I'm glass just with a little bit of fluid at the bottom. Gotta say, had a lot of fun at this one. The Saratoga Automobile Museum is awesome.
Yeah, that was a fantastic location, and we brainstormed that very briefly with
Peter Hughes.
With Peter a couple of weeks before that, and he said, where are we going to do this? And I think I said, try the museum. They'd love to have us. And it spoke to the curator or whatever you called it of the museum, and he said, oh, absolutely, no-brainer.
What a fun show, and the crowd was great. If you were part of that show, and it was a full house, thank you for being there. It will be on the air September 7th. What's Labor Day? 7th?
They said Labor Day, whatever Labor Day.
It's on Labor Day, yeah. And so that's pretty exciting, man. I mean, will you listen to yourself?
Absolutely.
Really?
Sure, it'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Let me know how it goes. No, it was a fun show. And really, I think that they're editing it now, and I think it went so well that they won't have to do much editing.
Well, we kept the language pretty civil, didn't we?
Except for Don.
Yeah, well, Don had to be reprimanded several times.
But it was a fun show, and if you were there, everybody, thank you for being there. Gordon Fricke's our guest today, and it's great driving weather today. What'd you drive down?
I took my Audi All-Road. I was going to take an older car, and I just didn't get anything out ready enough. I've got a Miata that I have not driven since last year, but I got behind. We were at Cape Cod last week, got back, so I'm just barely getting back into the swing of things.
You know, when we were at the auto show, you brought your Riviera.
Yeah.
And this is 65?
Five.
65? It's a sweet car. But that took leaded gas. So how do you make sure you don't have the pings and everything else when you drive around?
Yeah. So that car has very high compression.
Yeah.
And it requires octane booster. So I put premium ethanol free, and then I load it with octane booster, because if you're really cranking on that car, and that's a dual four-barrel factory engine, you will hear the pinging and detonation over all the howling of the carburetors. So anyway, octane booster, and you can put in a lead substitute also.
But you don't do that.
I do. I put them both in there.
You know, we've talked about this before, but in the old days before, when there was the transition from leaded gas to unleaded gas, a lot of us still had cars that took leaded gas.
Yep.
When those pings happened, and I remember them vividly, I mean, ping, ping, did it hurt the vehicle?
Yes, that detonation, that pre-ignition, could be and was detrimental to the engine if it was left running that way too long.
Oh.
It actually was known to shock the piston ring lands that hold the rings in place because of that pre combustion hammering the piston down. And they then fortified the pistons and the ringlands and the valve seats to handle the lack of lead. And then modifications started coming about to reduce the detonation through other emission controls, like an EGR valve and things like that. But, yeah, early on, the transition was horrible. The engines suffered.
So the engines now don't need octane boost.
They don't. They're totally under the control of the ECM, the computer. And the compression ratios have crept back up quite high on a lot of these direct injected engines, but the combustion chamber technology is much better, and the engines are more robust, and they have controls to keep the knocking, so you don't even hear it.
What is the stuff, by the way? What is octane boost? Is it just strong gas? What are you putting in?
I don't know what the chemical is that boosts up the octane. I should know that. Probably on the bottle.
If I dumped a couple gallons in the caddy, would it be a good idea?
No, because your car's totally designed for modern gas, so it wouldn't do you any. It would be no benefit.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to the emails, and then we'll go to the phones. Gordon Fricke's our guest today. It's 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. This is from Nick in Glens Falls. Nick writes, I have a 1985 Mercedes-Benz 300D. My rear main had a decent leak. My question is, can that cause any issues with the car, or can I just keep feeding her more oil until I get to changing it?
Yeah, basically, it's just going to be an ongoing leak. It isn't detrimental to the engine unless, obviously, you run out of oil.
Right.
But it's not really going to harm anything to speak of, no.
Okay. This one is from Tom in Gardner, Massachusetts. Okay. Any success with malfunctioning car CD players? First time it's happened in almost 60 years.
Wow. Well, you know, there was a time where you could get that stuff fixed. You remember Lake Auto?
No. Lake Electronics.
Lake Electronics.
Yes, I remember that well.
We're on Central Ave,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And they would fix car stereos, CD players, 8-tracks, cassettes, all that stuff.
But you had to take them out of your car.
Yes, and bring it to them. Right. But today, in today's world, I don't know who. I'm sure there are crafty people that could take a CD player apart and see what's going on in there.
We had a terrible minivan years ago. You probably remember that minivan. It was I won't say what brand, but it was.
I remember.
It was kind of a lemon. And my kids, they were very small at the time. Somebody put a lollipop stick in the CD player, never worked again. With CD players and electronics, car stereos in general now, you know, in the old days you could pull them out, put a new one in, do some they're all tied into the electronics and security now, right? But you can't do it anymore, can you?
They are so integrated that they are part of the car. And that became kind of an intentional thing because back in the days where the radio was a separate unit,
yeah,
the aftermarket car radio business was booming.
Yeah.
Because you could pull your factory unit out, put in a much nicer unit in its place. It fit the space perfectly. They made adapters for the wiring. And you could upgrade your stereo very quickly.
Used to do it myself.
All the time.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the radio started looking like the dash. They look, you know, they were completely integrated and they were giant boxes. And then somebody figured out, okay, we can make giant boxes for people. And they even had screens, but now they are so integrated and they're so good that there's no need to do much with them anymore.
But yet there are still some out there that do aftermarket car audio. So there must be a way to do it.
There's definitely speaker and amp upgrades. Amp upgrades. Some of your higher-end cars have such phenomenal sound systems. Bang & Olufsen,
yeah.
Bose, Fender. There's a bunch of...
Fender?
Yes. Volkswagen has Fender audio.
That's
or they
weird.
Did in their... I saw Fender in a bunch of their Passats.
You plug a guitar in?
I don't know. There must have been a jack where you could plug it and play in the car with it.
Oh, that's crazy.
I don't know if you could do that, but that'd be cool.
Yeah, all right. This email from Nick. Are the new car headlights safe for oncoming traffic? All of them, especially Subaru, says Nick, are so bright it's actually blinding.
It is a problem. Anybody that's encountered very, very modern-day LED lighting coming at you.
Yep.
It's a different type of light, and it's very piercing. And sometimes you think they're on high beams, and they aren't, and you flash the car coming, and they flash it even higher. There is talk right now about that very subject because it is becoming a hazard, and they're talking about having lights become more adaptive and less piercing.
You know, I think if I saw the news wires right, I think a bunch of Teslas were recalled just today because the low beams are too bright.
I'm not sure.
I don't have that exact.
Yeah, I didn't see that, but I would 100% believe it because, everybody's encountered it, and you're screaming, get those high beams off.
Yeah.
They are off.
Yeah, and, I think some people have forgotten the etiquette where if somebody has their high beams on by mistake, you just flick yours for a minute.
Just a friendly, it's like a friendly toot, a friendly flick of the beam.
Right.
Yeah.
And now they don't bother. Well, it's okay. It's the end of the world. Nick also writes, why do cars have the auto turn off at stops? Not only does it take a second for the car to get going, but the steering locks as well.
Yeah, that is to save gasoline. That's a fuel-saving device that, if you think about it over, most people don't dislike that function, and they'll eliminate it or push the off button. But
you can turn it off?
Most cars have the ability to turn it off on that one drive cycle. In other words, start the car up, push the button, and it stays off until you shut the car off and restart it.
Right.
Then you push the button again if you want to kill the feature. But if you think of the millions and millions of cars out on the road sitting at stoplights and traffic and stop signs and idling, if they all shut off for a period of time, there is way less consumption of gas. So the contrary then is, what about the starter? What about the battery?
Yeah.
And the steering came up. My wife mentioned that because her car has that feature. She said, I went to move the wheel, and there's no steering going on until the engine starts. And I said, yeah, that's the way the feature is. They assume that if you're at a traffic light with the engine off, you don't need to turn the wheels. But it startles you a little bit because you say, wait a minute, can I control this car? And then it starts, and bang, everything comes back up. I personally don't like it.
You know what? Being the sort of paranoid driver, I would be concerned that I would be in bumper-to-bumper gridlock traffic on the Hutchinson River Parkway.
Yes.
It's 97 degrees. The New Yorkers are not happy. I stop. My car goes off, and then I can't start it again.
So you and I think the same way.
Yeah.
Because we came back from Cape Cod, it was 87 degrees, humid and hot, and big stop-and-go traffic getting over the bridge and all that stuff. And I turned that feature off way ahead of time because I wouldn't want the freak no-start situation to occur on the Sagamore Bridge with 4,000 cars behind me and none of them happy.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Yeah, I had a car. One of my caddies died getting out of a Giants game one time.
Oh, my.
And that's a two-lane road, one in each direction. And I said to my son, we may be in trouble, lad. We made it.
But you might as well just motion to the nearest truck and say, I don't care what happens to the back of the car, just push me. Just get me out of here.
Let's take a break, and then we'll get to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Gordon Fricke today. Cars, your call's coming up. Star Eyes, there's Frank West here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551, the telephone number. If you have a question for Gordon Fricke today, and let's go to the phones. Mike is in East Greenbush. Mike, you're on.
Hi. I have a question. I have a 2014 Toyota Tacoma 4x2, and my airbag light's coming on. Should I be concerned? It's SRS airbag. I don't want it blowing up in my face while I'm driving. I don't. Should I bring it in?
Mm.
Yeah. So it really is not going to blow up in your face. That's extraordinarily rare. You hear so seldom of that ever happening. However, the reason the light is on is it detected a fault somewhere, and it could be in any of the airbags. If your car has integrated pre-tensioning seat belts, it's in that system too. It's all part of the supplemental restraint system. So to answer your question, I think it would be good to get it diagnosed, get it in, get it scanned. Depending on the extent of the repair, then you can decide how you feel about fixing it. It may be not horribly expensive. It could be a sensor out front. There are impact sensors out in front of the car behind the grill. And there was a fair amount of GM pickup trucks and Suburbans and Tahoes that had those out front fail due to corrosion. Easy to change, fix it, clear all the codes, boot the system back up, and the airbag system self-tests every single time you start the car. So it goes through a total self-test, and if the light's off, the system's happy. So I would get it checked.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. The number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke's our guest today. And let's see, Joanna is in South Hadley. Joanna, go ahead.
Hi there. I'm wondering, I have a 2009 Prius, and the plastic lenses on the front headlights are just quite yellowed and scratched looking. I've gone online, and they sell all kinds of potions and lotions for all kinds of money, and some things have, you need to get the kit that has four grades of sandpaper. Is there a way for me to improve the transparency on those lenses?
Yeah. Actually, it's a common enough concern, and those kits do work, depending on how handy you are and how deep you want to go into them. But the one with the stages, they're the most effective because they cut that dull oxidation off of the lens with the coarsest grit, and then they step you down super fine, then you end up with a polishing compound to get them nice and shiny.
How long does that process take? Because I have a kit that I bought to do this for my car, and I said, I just never have time. It's just still in the garage.
Yeah. Well, it depends how bad they are. If yours are minor, if it's minor fading or fogging up and it comes off easy, it's a lot quicker. There are some syrups that you can put on that temporarily helps clean them up. Doesn't make them perfect, but it takes the worst of it away. But the other option is get them professionally done by an auto body shop, and they will wet sand and buff the lenses with machines, with buffing equipment, and then polish them up. And then there's a final coat you put on, kind of like car wax. And that might be an option. Call a body shop and get an estimate. May not be that expensive for them to do it, but it's a good thing to do.
Joanna.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551, the number. Cars Today with Gordon Fricke. George is in Great Barrington. George, hello.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Sure.
Okay, great. First time caller, long time listener, first time caller.
Well, thank you. Welcome.
Thanks. So I have a 2020 Ford Escape SE Hybrid. When I turn the car on, sometimes, very randomly, totally random, the car just throttles. And then I turn it off, and everything's fine. I turn it back on. What's going on?
Yeah.
So when you push the button, the start button, it's the engine revving up like crazy?
Yes.
If you didn't shut it off, like the first time it happened, does it correct itself very quickly, or does it really go haywire?
I don't know. I don't want it to blow up.
Yeah. Well, it won't blow up because there's a rev limiter built in, so the engine
won't. Are you sure?
Oh, boy.
Well, pretty sure. Most cars of that vintage have rev limiters. But
vintage? It's 6 years old.
Yeah, rev limiters have been around for 15 years or
okay,
even
so
longer.
So what Gordon's saying is a 2020 should have
Yeah,
that.
It should. I guess my question is it a quick room, or does it want to just keep screaming?
Just keep screaming.
Wow.
Until I turn it off. It's okay. Embarrassing.
Yikes.
Okay. So is there a check engine light illuminated?
If I wasn't driving a car, there would not be a check engine light on.
Okay.
Say that.
Yeah, so you got no lights on. So
no, it's always on.
Oh, it's always on.
Oh, the check engine light. Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
So in that case, it should be scanned because there are definitely going to be some codes that more than likely lead to that event. And that engine has an electronic throttle plate. So when you actually push your foot down on the, I guess we would be safe to call it the accelerator pedal, you're not really flipping any flaps or moving any linkages. You're just sending a command to the computer that you want to go. So I'm thinking that the throttle unit is either getting incorrect information and going heavy open, or the throttle unit is gummed up and the blade is sticking, and it needs to be cleaned. Throttle body cleaning or service.
Yeah.
But so I guess the thing to do would be, A, get it scanned, see if there's any codes regarding the throttle unit.
I've scanned it.
Okay.
I have a scanner.
And what? Okay. What do they say? You said the check engines light is on, so you must have some code.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, it goes off when I properly fill up the gas tank and stuff.
What? So what are your codes?
It's definitely weird.
Yeah. Well.
I'm sorry, I don't have them memorized.
No, that's okay.
Yeah,
I'm
just curious if any of them had to do with engine controls or just EVAP or loose gas cap, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it does. I just have the cheap one.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I think it would be good to get it.
So what do you?
I would get it scanned to see if you've got any throttle codes or any codes that would lead to the throttle being overly applied.
Yeah, that sounds like not a good thing to have
on. And it's got to go to a shop because it's not a do-it-yourselfer procedure here, really.
Well, George, thanks for the call. Let me ask you a question. You know I'm somewhat reluctant to follow your advice about resetting the computer, but could this be a hard reset fix?
It's possible, and the thing of it is, when you reboot the car computer, it's just like rebooting your desktop, your phone. I mean, my phone goes haywire once in a while and certain functions, and you'll shut it down, you'll wait, and you'll restart it, and that glitch is gone.
Yeah.
And the same thing applies to cars. Cars are driving computers. There's modules all over the place. And I have done reboots that have corrected a lot of crazy stuff. This car makes it a little more complicated because it's a hybrid. Still has a gas engine. Still has a throttle blade. It has spark plugs. It has all the stuff any other car would have.
Right.
But it's got the hybrid hooked up to it, so there's way more sophisticated controls. So can you reboot the 12-volt system on that car? Yes, and you do it the same way you do any car. So it never hurts, I guess is the correct answer. Mm. And if it solves the problem, that's phenomenal.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Well, we have time for several more before the next break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Wendy is in Canaan. Wendy, you're up.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to know if I could use gas in my car that I put some of the stable in this winter for my generator and my
snowblower.
I put just a little bit of the stable in there. STABIL, I think.
Right, we got you.
Yep.
So you want to put some of that in your car, and you want to know if it's okay, right?
Yeah, I want to use it up because I end up without, you know, old gas hanging around.
Right.
Yeah.
Then I take it to the garage, but I'd like to just use it.
That's a good idea. The stable is harmless. It's fine. Okay. It'll completely go through the car, and even when you read the bottles of the stable or the stabilizers, they give you the recommended dosage, but then there's a little footnote that says overdosing is harmless.
Huh.
So it's not going to hurt your car by any means.
All right, Wendy.
And I always underdose it. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call. It's Gordon Fricke today. Cars, 800-348-2551 is the number. You think you'd ever do another one of those live events?
Yeah, that was great. Would you do it? Well, you kind of do.
I have some more on my plate for this year, but, you know, that one went so smoothly. Do we want to jinx it by doing another one? I mean, that was a pretty good show.
I think... maybe the next one could be better. We got experience.
Of course, I haven't heard it. I have not listened to the product that is being edited. And for all I know, it sounds lousy.
Would you want to go there again?
What?
To the same.
I'm going back to that Saratoga Automobile
That's what I'm
Museum
saying.
Anyway. I mean, that place is great.
Well, so we could have Peter keep an eye on the what they're featuring, because this was Mercedes-Benz.
Got to have Cadillacs.
But they do other brands or other makes, and I've seen Porsche, and I thought there was a Buick event there years ago.
Really?
And I was too late, because it would have been kind of nice to bring that Riviera there.
Heck yeah.
You know what?
For all the Mercedes, and there's some terrific ones, that Riviera is still up there for the cars I saw that day. That's gorgeous.
Thank you.
Of course, I've been in that one. It's nice.
Yeah, we took a little ride.
Yeah, we did, buddy, and we got it going pretty good. Matthew's in Kingston. Matthew, go ahead. Hey, Matthew, can you turn your radio down a little bit, man?
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's okay.
Hi, just thanks for taking my call. I just had a question about key fobs, and I was wondering if they get a little less expensive, or if maybe perhaps someone should, you know, wait until the tech is a little cheaper. I don't know. Just wondering if you could break down why they're so expensive, and what's the best way to basically get your car started without one, if that's possible.
Starting a car without a key fob.
Well, and in today's modern day world, no, because the ECM is looking for a match signal from that key fob, transponder signal. And even if the battery in your fob is dead, when you hold that fob up to a certain point in the car, the computer of the car will reach out to it and confirm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
That was always my concern. The battery would go out.
No, if the battery goes, you could take the battery right out of the key fob. And every car and every fob has a metal key. So there's a key slot. I shouldn't say every car. I may not be speaking for maybe Teslas or cars like that, because they start on a credit card. But your standard key fob has a metal key hidden in it somewhere. And you pull that key out, and then there's usually a hidden lock cylinder somewhere in the car. So you can get the door open and the hood up so you can get jump started and going.
Huh.
But the fobs... The computer in the car will reach out to the key fob. You just have to put it near a spot in the car.
But why are they so expensive? Getting back to Matthew's question.
Because they can be. Because the manufacturer says, okay, you're going to buy an XYZ car with three letters in the name or a very prominent name, and that fob is going to be very unique to that car.
Yeah.
And if you lose them, you got to come to us, and we can kind of dictate the price.
Because
he's right. They're too expensive. I've heard of people, you know, $400, $500, $600 for a key fob.
Well, that's crazy talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nuts. Matthew, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Let's go. Wow, this is weird. Now, Jim from Matamoros usually only calls during Medical Monday. But here he is on the car show, and I think it's very similar. Jim, go ahead.
I've got a 2012 black hole. Every time I drop a tool in there, I never see it again. A couple of years ago, it was a ball peen hammer in the front end. This year, it's a putty knife in between the back bumper and the little strip that connects to it. One of the little clips was out and leaving a gap there. So it was too hard for me to pull it by myself.
Yeah.
But taped a couple of putty knives and used one on one hand, and I should have took the other two out, but one fell down in there.
Oh yeah.
And I tried to use a big magnet, but I got that stuck. The cord on it broke off. I finally did get that out. But now the trunk lid popped open several times, and last week the key fob quit on me. The car said that it couldn't recognize the key fob. I'm about 20, 30 miles away from home.
Oh, boy.
So I did finally get it to start the car, and I got home. But I'm wondering if that's a connection or just a coincidence.
Oh, so the stuff that you left in the engine, you're afraid that that might be something to do with the fob not working. It's probably battery, right?
You think it's like interference, you know, like putting your cell phone in a microwave and it won't read anymore?
I doubt it. But
well, this is the thing that is bothering me now is the putty scraper in between the back bumper and the body.
Yeah. So the signal for the key fob, I don't believe goes out in that area. I think it's sent out. In fact, I know it's sent out from the ECM inside the car.
Okay.
Because a lot of us have been trying to start our car, and the message says key fob not recognized.
Right.
Hold closer.
Right.
And you say, oh, the key's over there on the picnic table or whatever.
Yeah.
But as we were speaking about earlier, as the battery gets weak in the key fob, it affects its range. But once you get that fob inside the car closer to the ECM or the spot where the transponder and the receiver are, it'll start. How's the battery? Have you changed the battery in that key fob recently, Jim?
I did since then, but it wasn't that, and I checked the main battery on the car, and it said 11.6 volts.
That's low.
That is low. Well, I'll tell you what, Jim. Let me give you one piece of advice about the magnet. So I found one of the, I'm like you. I would drop screwdriver bits in and ratchets in and out. Finally, I found, and I don't know where it was, at Harbor Freight or an auto parts store, it's just a telescoping thing that has a magnet on the end, very strong magnet, and you can hold it. It's not on a string. You hold it, and you can get what you need. It works every time.
Well, what Jim is saying, though, is true. Under the hood of today's cars, a lot of them have a complete plastic shield, a belly pan or a shield underneath it to seal the engine from the bottom, and stuff falls in there on the while you're working the cars constantly, and it drives me insane.
Yeah.
And I've lost sockets and wrenches and screwdrivers because I can't remember where they went, and then they drove off in the car. But very quickly, I had a customer's car that I worked on last fall, and the car came in maybe this spring, and they said there's a very strange rattling sound coming from between, like, the firewall and the engine. I just can't figure out what it was. So I raised the car up, I did a service on it, and I found a magnetic flashlight.
No way.
That I had dropped off the back the back of the engine. It stuck to a metal brace and hung there all winter, and it got itself down too tight, and the engine was just barely touching it, rattling it against the firewall, and that light looked beat. And I pulled that light out of there, and it turned right on.
You see, that's a commercial waiting to happen. Let's take an underwriting break now. 800-348-2551 is our number. Cars with Gordon Fricke. We'll be back. Bobby Broom on the guitar there, superstar here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. It's Cars with Gordon Fricke. And let's do a kind of a lightning round. Let's
blast through
some emails here, and then we'll go back to the phones. Larry writes in, VW EA888 coil connectors. Any tricks in getting the coil electrical connectors on the coil harness to release? They're stuck. Only 60,000 miles since the last plugs. Can I use a little bit of silicone spray as a persuader?
So I'm thinking he's having trouble getting the electrical connector off of the coil.
Yeah.
And Volkswagen and Audi and some other European car makers seem to be buying these ridiculous connectors from some vendor. And I hate them. I've broken hundreds of them. They get hard. They get brittle. And you can't open them.
They're plastic?
Oh, yeah. And they get very hard. You can reach in there, and if you look at one that's operating that you've removed successfully, you'll see what action happens when you're supposed to push this little part of the connector down. There's a little clip that opens up, like a little tongue. And you can sneak in there with a thin blade, like a tiny, tiny screwdriver, and pop that open. I think you can buy replacements, but that means cutting the wires or taking all of the pins out. It's a lot of work. But that's a super common problem with these cars, and they come in with half of them broken all the time.
Why, if something is going to require replacement, would you make it from a flimsy part?
And they've used those connectors for years and years and years, and I'm not the only one that's encountered these.
Okay. John writes in, I've been looking at a late 60s red Corvair Spider up on blocks in front of a junkyard. It's exactly the kind of car I'd want to renovate. But should I just avert my gaze whenever I pass the place and don't tell my wife I asked? And that's from John.
I think Corvairs are interesting cars.
They got a bad rap.
They got
many years ago.
They got, well, it was Ralph Nader.
Right.
And we won't talk personalities or politics or any of that stuff. But he crushed that car because of a potential handling problem that they had in the first generation car.
So that was a rear engine?
It was a six-cylinder rear engine car, and Porsche helped design the engine. GM reached out to Porsche, which had great experience in air-cooled engines. Smooth, decent power. Just an interesting car because they were competing with the Beetle primarily back in those days. But anyway, it's an underrated car. GM said, we're not going to, you know, Nader's killing sales. We're just going to get rid of it. We got other irons in the fire, and they tapered production off very quickly. They made it till 69, but it was very, very low numbers. But anyway, I'm off track with this, with the question. It's a cool car. They can be had at reasonable money, and you can still buy massive amounts of parts for these things.
But so, are they safe? Or are they unsafe at any speed?
No. In fact, what year did he say did that?
I didn't say, or I deleted it, or whatever.
1965 to 69 was the redesigned version with the different rear end, the different rear axles, and that tendency to be tipsy is not there anymore. But it'd be a nice car.
All right, and someday I want to ask you what, in fact, a mid-engine is. I know there are German cars that have it, and the Pontiac Fiero was ballyhooed back in the day for having a mid-engine.
Yeah, the engine.
Where are you going to put it, under the seats?
Well, it's actually in front of the rear axle. So, yes, it's where the back seat would normally be in a regular car.
Yeah.
Or Porsche 914s. The engine was flat. It was a Volkswagen flat engine, so it fit under there. Kind of murder to work on, but it centralized the mass of the car, so they handled really well.
Mm.
The weight was kind of centered. Great concept. A lot of race cars were mid-engine because of the handling characteristics.
All right, Matt in Rosendale writes, I have a 2012 VW Jetta, a 2.0-liter engine. I'm having a code that indicates a faulty fuel injector on cylinder one only. How common is it for one injector only to fail?
Very, because they don't all have to fail together. They're electronic, and it may not necessarily be the fuel injector. It could be the circuitry to it. Could be a connector, not great. You know, could be a bad ground. Could be rodent damage to a wire. And the email didn't say that the car was misfiring. So if the light is on, the car runs great. The computer's measuring an imbalance in probably resistance or voltage somewhere.
Yeah.
So anyway, to answer the core question, not uncommon for one injector out of the bunch to be a problem.
All right, last email for now, and then we'll jump back to the phones. This one's from Frank. There are many gas line additives on the market that claim to clear away your check engine light. Some even say they can fix your catalytic converter. Do you know if any of these gas line additives actually work? And is it true that such additives can be an alternative to an expensive catalytic converter repair?
Sometimes yes. And they're not all snake oil. You want to use a well-known, trusted brand name. Not, you know.
Right. Something I brewed up in the newsroom.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Yeah, Ray's Weasel.
Special brew.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. So you can have deposits that accumulate on the catalytic converter core and prevent the catalytic action from occurring, and it will coat your sensors, your oxygen sensors, and make them slow and lazy. And these additives also go in and clean your fuel injectors. If you have non-direct injection, they'll clean your intake valves, they'll clean your piston tops, your sensors in the exhaust and your catalytic converter. Long story short, if you have a deposit problem and these clean it up, you're absolutely home free. You could save yourself thousands of dollars.
But you can't overuse them, right?
Read the label. You don't want to put too many in between oil changes because it gets in the oil.
Yeah.
After probably a couple of applications, if your light's still on, you're not getting anywhere.
Okay.
But they're worth a try.
Go back to our phones. Gordon Frick, he's our guest, and David is in Troy. David, go ahead.
Mr. Fricky, I have a cosmetic rather than a mechanical question.
Okay.
All right.
And that is this. I have a black car, and I want it to do a good polish, wax job, whatever you might call it. And a mechanic recommended to me a system, I think it might have been made by Turtle Wax, I'm not sure, called the Ice Car Polish System. Yes, ICE.
Yep.
And I wasn't completely happy with the result. There was a certain amount of streakiness that resulted in, and I had to keep going over it to wipe off the fluid. Is there some system that you could recommend? It's a black car. The body is 99% in great condition. And I just feel as though, you know, when it's all washed and cleaned, it looks like a brand new car.
Yeah.
But I feel as though it would behoove me to do some kind of a polish wax treatment to it.
How old is the car? What year is it?
It's a 2000. You saw this car briefly once. It's a 2006 Chevy HHR. Owned by a mechanic for many years in perfect condition, but he had a garage, and yeah. I don't.
So there's a system where you can use a clay bar to first wipe the entire surface, and the clay pulls imperfections and dust and junk that's embedded in the paint out of there.
Actual clay.
It's some type of clay, yes. Huh. And I have a friend of mine who's phenomenal with he clay bars and waxes all of his vehicles, and it's a lot of work.
I'll be darned.
But boy, do they come out nice. And so it's a step system where you clay bar it, and I'm not sure what the follow-up is, but then the application of the wax is critical. And I think he uses some type of a ceramic wax, and there's different ones out there. But look into clay bar treatments and see what you think of that, because a lot of people love the results because it gets all the bad stuff off of the surface. If you wax bad paint, it kind of looks like waxed bad paint, you know?
All right, David, thanks a lot for that one. Let's go now to Swanton, Vermont, and it's Dawson's turn. Dawson, go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I'm just calling to ask about the transmissions in the newer trucks, especially. A lot of them are 10 speeds. Is the 10 speed transmission overkill for the application on most gasoline motors compared to the old 4 and 6 speed transmissions on the older vehicles?
Yeah, the answer is kind of yes. It's nice to have all those ranges because the engine can be kept at its optimum torque output. The shifts are so often, it doesn't drop your RPM much, keeps the engine in the sweet spot, so to speak. However, that 10 speed, which appeared in Fords and Chevys, has proven to be bad news. A lot of people don't like the shifting strategy because it senses your load. And if you're taking it easy, it'll skip gear. So you're all of a sudden saying, wow, I'm going from 1 to 3 and 3 to 5. What's going on
here?
Can
you skip a gear safely for the vehicles?
The automatic can.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
It'd be like taking your stick car and going from 1st to 3rd, right?
Yeah.
You just bypass 2nd.
Okay.
But that transmission that lived in those Fords and Chevys created a tremendous amount of trouble. I called a Ford dealer once because I had a customer who wanted to flush the transmission fluid on a 10-speed. The dealer said, we won't touch them unless they're 60,000 miles, and we have every customer sign a release that we're not responsible 3 months from now if the transmission goes bad.
Wow, that's not good.
So you really don't need all those gears. They have an 8-speed version that's not as bad. and, you know, even sixes, and I have one car with a 7-speed automatic and the other's got a 6-speed automatic. It's nice to have all those ranges, but it is overkill on the 10-speed, I think.
Dawson.
Okay, and I was wondering also if I could just give a shout-out to my daughter who's in Albany right now, and she's on her way down to Paris Island with a group of kids to boot camp.
Yes.
I was wondering if I could just could I do a shout-out to my daughter, Annie.
All right, do it. Yes.
That's great.
All right,
fantastic.
Annie, I love you very much, and best of luck.
Hey, that's great. And Dawson, thanks a lot for that one. Let's see now. Okay, let's go to Chris and Who's a Tonic. Chris, you're on.
Hey, Gordon. I got a couple questions for you.
Sure.
Is it safe to, just spray wash your engine? And the second question I have is, I got a white spot on my left right rear Jeep, and I've been trying to figure out how to get rid of that.
Okay.
So washing the engine in today's world is a little bit tricky because of all of the sensors, all of the connectors, deep spark plug wells. And if water gets down in those spark plug wells, you've got a horrible misfire and it won't usually evaporate by itself. I would leave the engine cleaning to a detail shop that does these.
Okay.
And they won't over soak the engine, but they'll make it look nice and get it cleaned up.
All right.
The spot on the car, what color is your vehicle?
It's a black vehicle, Gordon.
Is it a Jeep Grand Cherokee?
Yep, it's a Jeep Grand Cherokee Limited Edition.
Uh-huh. Right. So the spot is, when you say white, is it, did something get spilled on it, or what does it look like?
Is it bird doo-doo?
Yeah.
No, it's not that. It was in the body shop about a couple months ago, and I guess they didn't do a good job, and the white spot is still there.
Oh, boy.
Well, I think if you had it to a shop for that, have you asked them if they could revisit that concern?
I didn't get that around to that, but I should do it next time that I go to my car dealership.
I would, because if you try to polish it or clean it or do something to it, then they're going to say, we don't know what to do here with you because it's worse. Or whatever happened, you've done something to it. Leave it, and I would talk to them, and they're going to want to see it. Maybe it's going to be easy to fix.
All right. Hey, Chris, thanks a lot for the call. So the upshot is, don't wash your engine.
I would be really careful, okay. Pressure washing or putting tons of water under the hood.
You know, I'm notoriously, I have a bad memory, right? But I swear he's asked that question before.
I think we have heard that before, yeah.
Yes, yes. Michael in Latham wants to know, is top-tier gas worth the extra cost?
Yes, and it's more important today than it ever was because of the direct-injected gasoline engines, GDI.
Yeah.
And the fuel deposit concern is way worse than it ever was.
Yeah.
When the injectors used to spray in back of the intake valves, when you used good quality gas with good cleaners and additives, it took care of a ton of problems. Now the injectors are spraying directly in the engine, so we're getting severely caked up intake valves, severely caked up intake passages. So the short answer is yes, top tier is very important.
Now, just to make sure I got this, you're not supposed to wash your engine.
I would avoid a lot of water and a lot of pressure washing.
Okay.
Send it to a detail shop.
All right, I hope Chris, just don't do it. Support comes from Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, for summer blooming shrubs and perennials, including hydrangea, coneflower, and native asters, wardsnursery.com. At Plaza Travel Center, presenting small group trip from Albany to Finland's Northern Lights in February, escorted. For trip details, gene@plazatravel.net. All right, thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thank you all for the calls. Thank you for the emails. I apologize if we didn't get to yours. Gordon will be here next month and hopefully every month, and maybe we'll do another live show. That will be coming up on Labor Day, which is before Europe. I think you're actually scheduled the day after. So we'll have double shot of Gordon Fricke that week.
Double header.
There you go. Well, thanks again for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Bowen. Owen O'Leary screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, yep, we got travel. We got Gene Gagnon. We'll see you, too.